The Benjamin Dixon Show is only possible with listener support. Go to www.thebenjamindixonshow.com to register for our blog and join the Progressive Army.
Today is Friday, January 27th, 2023. Thank you for joining me. Later today, we are expecting the release of the video that led to the death of Tyree Nichols in Memphis, Tennessee. Everyone is bracing themselves. There are even statements from the White House, from Kamala Harris, as well as President Joe Biden, condemning what they saw in an attempt to make sure that the nation does not have a repeat of what happened with George Floyd. Because according to the chief of police of Memphis, Tennessee, the video is appalling and something that she compares to the beating of Rodney King. Take a listen in to the police chief of Memphis, Tennessee, as she spoke with Don Lemon.
What was your reaction?
I was outraged. It was incomprehensible to me. It was unconscionable. And I felt that I needed to do something and do something quickly. I don't think I've witnessed anything of that nature in my entire career.
Really?
Really.
That bad?
It was that bad.
What are we going to see then?
You're going to see acts that defy humanity. You're going to see a disregard for life, duty of care that we're all sworn to, and a level of physical interaction that is above and beyond what is required in law enforcement. And I'm sure that, you know, as I said before, that individuals watching will feel what the family felt. And if you don't, then you're not a human being. And we all are human beings. And I think there will be a measure of sadness as well.
The officers involved have been fired. Four of the five officers have been charged with murder. Tadarius Bean, Demetrius Haley, Emmett Martin III, Desmond Mills Jr., and Justin Smith were all fired last week. The police chief also said that that race can't be a part of this conversation because everyone involved was black. I beg to differ. I beg to differ. There are too many instances of black people being the very best executors of white supremacy in this country. It has been that way for some time. Since we were stolen and brought here, there have always been black people who have found their way out or up through doing the bidding of white supremacy. So it is absolutely a part of the conversation because it is not the color of the skin of the police officer. It is the mindset of the blue. Listen in again to Don Lemon speaking with the chief of police of Memphis, Tennessee.
Let's talk about the video.
Yes.
It has been said that it is reminiscent, perhaps worse than the Rodney King video. Is that your assessment?
That's my assessment. Yeah. I was in law enforcement during the Rodney King incident, and it's you know, very much aligned with that same type of behavior.
That it's worse?
Sort of groupthink. I would say it's about the same, if not worse.
The officers involved were a part of Memphis's Scorpion Unit, which, according to the BBC, stands for Street Crimes Operation to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods. They love their acronyms. And they are a 50-person unit with the mission of bringing down crime levels in particular areas. I mention this because here's another clip of a man who was involved with those same, who got pulled over by the same officers, a part of the Scorpion Unit, and reported what happened to him to internal affairs prior to Tyree Nichols. And so had internal affairs done their job when they were first reported on, Tyree Nichols would still be alive today. This reminds me, I'm going to play the clip, but I will never forget when I saw a police officer, a school resource officer, slap a student with my own eyes. And I went down to, I guess, stop it. you know, but he had already stopped by the time I got down. But I went directly to the police station and reported it to the internal affairs and never heard from them again. So much for internal affairs.
Cornell McKinney says the same Scorpion unit stopped him January 3rd, 4 days before Nichols was pulled over.
I actually read it on the back of their vest. It said MPD Scorpion unit.
It was at this Marathon gas station at Ridgeway and Knight Arnold as he was catching a ride with a friend.
All I hear is, freeze, get out the car. Put your hands up before I blow your heads off. Both of you, get out the car. So put your hands up. So I put my hands up, and one of the officers proceeded to come to the car, and he physically pulled me out by my shoulder with a gun no more than a foot away from my head.
He says the officers in unmarked cars would never say why they had been stopped. He took this picture of the stop. They eventually asked who the drugs belonged to.
I said, man, I just went across the street to get a pizza, and I'm on my way back to the house. He's like, well, who in the rabbit is bound? I said, well, can we call my lawyer? And the officers, he yelled out, well, this ain't court. This ain't a time for lawyer. I was like, man, I just came to get a pizza. So he was like, man, we just playing. It ain't a pound in a car. And he let me walk off.
He showed us his call log when he says he placed two phone calls to MPD's internal affairs to complain about the officer's forcefulness. But he says he still hasn't heard back. Then he saw the picture of the five officers fired in the Tyree Nichols case.
I was like, that's them. I said, that's crazy. That's them. I said, now they done really hurt somebody. This could have been prevented if the internal affairs took action like I was asking them to do.
We asked Memphis police about the stop involving Cornell McKinney and are also waiting to hear back.
I'm still waiting to hear back from internal affairs about something I reported. I guess now has to be at least 10 years ago. It's not coming. It's not going to happen. Everyone involved, every level of government from local to federal, they are all trying to brace the nation for what we're getting ready to see later on today, which is Friday. They expect to release the video sometime around 6 p.m. Central Time, so 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm not sure if I'm going to watch the video. Part of me doesn't want to watch. It honestly took me weeks to watch the George Floyd video. I turned away as soon as I heard him crying for his mother. So I'm not entirely sure about sharing the video, but I do understand those who will. And I quite possibly will myself, because as much as everyone is giving their statements and condemning these officers, as quickly as Memphis has moved to fire and charge these individuals, the system is still the same. And the system is so effective that it can get black men to treat other black men the same way that the system has treated black people the entire time. That's how effective the system is. I want you to listen to this clip of District Attorney, the Memphis District Attorney, Steve Mulroy, as he describes having a conversation. Everybody wants to have a conversation, but I do kind of appreciate his sentiments here. Take a listen in.
While each of the five individuals played a different role in the incident in question, the actions of all of them resulted in the death of Tyree Nichols, and they are all responsible. The city will be releasing the video sometime after 6 p.m. Friday, tomorrow. Let me close by saying, both to the family of Tyree Nichols and to the broader community here in Memphis and Shelby County, we all want the same thing. We want justice for Tyree Nichols. It's my hope that if there is any silver lining to be drawn from this very dark cloud, it's that perhaps this incident can open a broader conversation about the need for police reform. The world is watching us, and we need to show the world what lessons we can learn from this tragedy. I'm hopeful that we can show them who I know us to be, a community working towards positive change here in Memphis and Shelby County.
The only problem is that we've had so many conversations, and the real conversation should honestly be defunding the police. No one wants to have that conversation. Every city is still giving billions of dollars, taking the majority of the largesse of the tax coffers and turning it over to this protection racket called the police. No one is going to have that conversation. But what they're doing is trying to make sure that everyone who will see this video, who is going to be outraged, they want to make sure that no one actually protests in a way that is unmanageable. Okay. All right, fine. But when is the system going to change? Last but not least, before I change this topic and move on, I want to play the clip of Tyree's mother. She's calling for peaceful protest. And I, of course, you know, I am always going to side with the family in this situation. They're in the process of getting justice. And so calling for peaceful protests absolutely makes sense. And I support them in that. But the question is what is actually going to change and when, so that another mother does not have to sit here and ask people to be peaceful when their child was brutally killed by the system? Take a listen in.
To protest in peace. I don't want us burning up our cities, tearing up the streets, because that's not what my son stood for. And if you guys are here for me and Tyree, then you will protest peacefully. You can get your point across, but we don't need to tear up our cities, people, because we do have to live in them.
And I'm going to leave it there, because that is the request of the mother. And of course, you know, I stand for peaceful protest. I do. But I also know that this system is perfectly designed to let us go out there and march and sing Kumbaya. And then when it's all said and done, we will be doing this again, probably in the next few weeks, because the system is still going to kill us, because that's what it was designed to do. More on what's happening in the state of Florida, the level of fascism that is coming particularly and specifically from the state of Florida, I think is on the, it puts the state of Florida on the leading edge, the tip of the spear of this ongoing coup, this slow rolling fascist coup to remake America in the image of the Republic of Gilead. I want to read from the New Republic. A Florida panel recommends forcing student athletes to give schools their menstrual history. The Florida High School Athletic Association says student athletes should be required to give detailed information about their periods when they register to play. The Florida High School Athletic Association is standing by its decision to require student athletes to give their schools detailed information about their periods in an unprecedented policy that is raising major concerns. The FHSAA announced in October that it was changing its annual physical form for student athletes to a digital version instead of paper. The form includes optional but detailed questions about students' menstruation cycles, including when they got their first period and when they had their most recent one, and how many weeks passed between periods. Now, again, this recommendation came down, or this change came in October, but according to the New Republic, the panel decided not only on Tuesday night to stand by the change, but to recommend that menstrual history questions be made mandatory. Now, why would they do this, you may ask? Well, Florida is one of the states that has banned abortions after 15 weeks, and they have banned transgender girls from competing. And this is, according to many activists and journalists, they believe that this is just the front line of that war against women and against transgender women. Again, from the New Republic, many parents and doctors are worried that schools will use the menstrual data to monitor students for late or missed periods, a possible sign of pregnancy, or to out transgender students by watching for girls who don't get periods or boys who do. It's funny, if you saw the image of the panel as they sat on their Zoom conference and they made this decision, it was nothing but white men. So much so that one commenter said that it looked like a Klan rally meeting. And I glanced back up, and truth be told, that's exactly what it looked like. And the impact, the results, the underlying bigotry of it is all the same. The state of Florida is the tip of the spear of fascism, and women, transgender women and transgender men, they are on the front lines of the fight against fascism, because the fascists and the Nazis have targeted them first. I get asked, I don't get asked this all the time, but I have been asked several times, Ben, why are you fighting so hard for the LGBTQIA community and the trans people? Because That's who the Nazis are targeting right now. And let's not get it twisted. I'm but one step away from being targeted the same. What's the old saying? First they came for the communists, but I didn't stand up because I wasn't one. Then they came for the socialists. Like this is absolutely the same case. And if we sit back and stand by and watch as Nazis terrorize, target, and kill any group of people because we are not a part of that community, then we have made it that much easier for them to target us. And honestly, that's a selfish kind of explanation because we should just fight for them because they're human. But perhaps we can appeal to other people's sensibilities and help them overcome their transphobia or whatever it is that allows us to sit back and watch this happen to an entire community because we either don't understand or we don't approve of what someone is doing in their own life. Maybe a selfish appeal could help us to stand up more, because I'm going to be honest with you. The fact of the matter is we should be fighting for them simply because they are human and they have a right to be who they are. No, nobody has to live according to my personal standard. No one has to live according to your personal standard. If someone wants to live outside of the constraints of Christianity, that's their prerogative. That's their right. And to be quite honest with you, as much as I love the Lord, as much as I go to church and I can quote scriptures with the best of them, man, I love worship music more than I'm one of those people who lift their hands and cry in church. I am so sick and tired of hearing pious men who can't control their own penises trying to tell other people how to live. Until the church gets control over the pedophiles and the sexual abusers that are in the church and being protected by church members, they have no right to lecture anybody. So if you're looking for a reason to stand up for somebody else, I mean, maybe the selfish appeal will work. But at the end of the day, the right thing to do is to fight on behalf of every person so that they can live the lives that they want to live, whether you approve of it or not. Well, Ben, what about the groomers, the largest set of groomers? I think I'm gonna have to interview this one sister that I found on Twitter who is reporting on all of the actual cases of sexual assault, molestation, pedophilia, and grooming, and they are all white conservative men. I guarantee you're going to find some that are not conservative, but right now, the overwhelming list that is ongoing on Twitter right now of the real culprits are people that you find in church. So miss me with that. Get your own house in order.
Go to www.patreon.com/thebpdshow and get twice the content and unfiltered interviews without any of the commercial interruptions. Welcome back to the Benjamin Dixon Show. Visit us online at thebenjamindixonshow.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be having a patron party. There's an announcement that's coming up for the morning show, Like It or Not. Some big changes that are coming up, and I think you're going to enjoy them. Yeah, I think you're going to enjoy them. That's my hope. So tonight at 9 p.m., make sure that you're at the patron party, patreon.com/thebpdshow. If you're a patron of mine, you can get access to it. And if you're a patron of Like It or Not, patreon.com/likeitornot, you can get access to it as well. I want to go back to the story of Charles McGonigal, who was the head of cyber and counterintelligence at the FBI's New York office, who was arrested this week or over the weekend because of, well, being essentially a Russian agent and receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from Russian oligarchs. And it seems that he played a critical role in the collusion that ultimately led to the victory of Donald Trump in 2016. And I want to read a thread for you from Twitter from Timothy Snyder, who is 11th professor of history at Yale. And one of the individuals who broke the story about the Putin and Trump collusion. And this is what he said. In April 2016, I broke the story of Trump and Putin using Russian open sources. Afterwards, I heard vague intimations that something was awry in the FBI in New York, specifically counterintelligence and cyber, We now have a suggestion as to why. The person who led the relevant section, Charles McGonigal, has just been charged with taking money from the Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska. The reason I was thinking about Trump and Putin in 2016 was a pattern Russia had sought to control Ukraine using social media, money, and a pliable head of state. Russia backed Trump the way that it had backed Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych in the hopes of soft control. Now, I have to pause there before I continue reading. This part I've covered from the Ukrainian perspective, Yanukovych's complicity. And actually, I can simplify it. Right now, as the war in Ukraine is raging, former President Yanukovych is not in Ukraine. He is in Russia. So that tells you everything that you need to know in terms of who and what he was. In 2014, he was ousted in what tankies and leftists who like to align with Vladimir Putin are calling a coup. In reality, it was an impeachment. With an overwhelming majority, a supermajority of the parliament in Ukraine voted to oust this puppet of Vladimir Putin by the name of Viktor Yanukovych versus Viktor Yushchenko, who was poisoned by a Russian agent. I don't think that the people who are defending Russia in this battle really are being either don't know the history. Actually, no, they know the history. They are muddying the waters with the history and making fine changes in the history, like calling the Revolution of Dignity, calling it a coup. But I digress. Let me get back to the thread from Timothy Snyder. Trump and Yanukovych were similar figures, interested in money and in power to make or shield money, and therefore vulnerable partners for Putin. They also shared a political advisor, Paul Manafort. He worked for Yanukovych from 2005 to 2015, taking over Trump's campaign in 2016. Manafort had to resign as Trump's campaign manager in August of 2016 when news broke that he had received $12.7 million in cash from Yanukovych. But these details are just minor elements of Manafort's dependence on Russia. Again, I'm reading a thread from Timothy Snyder, one of the professors and journalists who helped break the story of Russian collusion in 2016. He continues and says this: Manafort worked for Deripaska, the same Russian oligarch to whom McGonigal is linked. Between 2006 and 2009, Manafort's assignment was to soften up the U.S. for Russian influence. He promised a, quote, a model that could greatly benefit the Putin government. While Manafort worked with Trump in 2016, though, Manafort's dependence on Russia was deeper. He owed the oligarch money, not a position one wants to be in. Manafort offered his overlord private briefings on the campaign. He was hoping to get hold. Reconsider how the FBI treated the Trump-Putin connection in 2016. Trump and other Republicans screamed that the FBI had overreacted. In retrospect, it seems the exact opposite took place. This is the kicker, y'all. Listen, in retrospect, it seems that the exact opposite took place. The issue of Russian influence was framed in a way convenient for Russia and Trump. The FBI investigation, Crossfire Hurricane, focused on the narrow issue of personal connections between the Trump campaign and Russians. It missed Russia's cyber attack and the social media campaign, which, according to Kathleen Hall Jamieson, won the election for Trump. Okay, there's a whole lot more to this thread, but if you've been listening this week, I hope you can see the thread of all the connections, especially in the terms of the methodology. We are literally suffering underneath the exact effects that led to the war in Ukraine in the first place. We're living through the disinformation that is coordinated at the highest levels, disseminated from the bottom up, like Marissa Nessa, the Nobel Prize award-winning journalist who wrote the book How to Stand Up to Dictators, how she said on our episode yesterday. This is a strategy that has fared excellent. I mean, it's gotten great results for Vladimir Putin. And had Vladimir Putin's army had actually been as good as his propaganda, Ukraine would have fallen by now. And these ties are all the way at the highest levels of the FBI. I often talk about how these fascists are infiltrating our country. They have already done so. And we are just now learning the extent to which
They infiltrated the Trump campaign and actually just brought Trump to this country as president of the United States.
Well, Ben, that is 2016 and the race is over. I'm not so much concerned like some people, the fact that Hillary Clinton lost. I'm more concerned that Vladimir Putin won. I'm more concerned that we're still living in the effects and the impact of what happened in 2016. We're still feeling it right now. We're still dealing with the propagandists. We haven't gotten rid of those propagandists. They're still here. They're still running the same play. It's just now that it's being revealed to us the extent to which these tentacles from Russia, from Vladimir Putin's strategy, have infiltrated the United States empire. The infrastructure, the institutions. And when you couple that with the fact that this seamlessly works so well, the hand of Vladimir Putin works so seamlessly well with white supremacy in the United States of America, you literally have white Americans pledging their allegiance to Vladimir Putin because of the woke left, because of transgenderism, because of George Soros. I mean, this is literally why we have to have a coalition that is so deep and so broad. We must unify with every single group that is targeted by these pan-reactionary fascists, this global alliance of white supremacists. I want to say Christian, but they're not from my perspective, they're far from Christian. They're just using the language of Christ, of not even the language of Christ. They're using the language of the Old Testament and the bludgeoning of the Old Testament as a way of abuse and to gain political power. But it is a coalition of white supremacists, global pan-reactionaries, and so-called Christians who are targeting everyone that does not bow down to what they want. It's not even about living a lifestyle the way that they would approve. It's about whatever lifestyle they approve today. It doesn't matter, because ultimately it's about power. It's about power. And the way that they can get the power is by making sure that every white conservative in the United States of America hates anything that's not pure blood, anything that doesn't sit nicely in their fundamentalist churches, and anything that doesn't look and sound like the beauty of the white culture. This is what Vladimir Putin is pushing, and he found a useful idiot in Donald Trump, because they had agents like Paul Manafort and apparently FBI agents like Chris McGonigal who were willing to betray this country for some money, for some cash. Anyway, God bless goddamn America. Yes, God bless goddamn America. Because as twisted, the fact that we have to be on pins and needles about what's getting ready to be released for Tyre Nichols, the fact that every other episode I have to label it justice for somebody, justice for Jaheim McMillan, justice for, every other episode I have to cover a mass shooting. With all of the problems that are happening in this country, the people who are vying to replace America are they're enemies of humanity. They're enemies of progress. They're enemies of dignity. They are enemies of black people. They are enemies of Jewish people. They are enemies of Muslims. They're enemies of gay people. And that's why I stand so ardently by the LGBTQIA community. I know there's problems in terms of racism, even over there. I dig it. I get it. But at the end of the day, if fascists are coming after you, that means I need to be on your side. Because the last thing that we want to deal with, and I would rather fight with a Southerner who was raised in racism, and they got to figure out their way of how not to be racist if they're genuine about it. I would rather work alongside with that than people who have a strategy to overthrow liberal democracy on the global stage so that they can empower people like Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban, and yes, Elon Musk. Patrons, stay tuned. Everyone else, I'll see you next time.